I couldn't let tonight's show pass without playing something by Charles Bradley, the Screaming Eagle of Soul. Sadly, we lost Charles this week from stomach cancer. And Charles was, I believe, in his late 60s. Fame and fortune came very late in life for Charles Bradley when he sings, "Why Is It So Hard to Make It in America?" Here's someone who struggled for a very long time, but held on, and finally made it, albeit very late in life. I ran into Charles Bradley once in Times Square, visiting New York City with my family, and I saw this gentleman walking down the street, and I thought, that looks like Charles Bradley. So I went up to him, and I said, "You're Charles Bradley," and he was just so tickled to get some recognition, and I shook his hand, and I said, "Thank you for everything you do. You're just a wonderful, wonderful performer." And he, you know, if you read the obituaries about Charles Bradley, everyone seems to have this same sense that he just wanted to give everybody a hug. He wanted to hug the world. There was no bitterness, no hate, despite the fact that he struggled for so long. So, Charles Bradley, gone too soon. Just a reminder that this weekend, if you're wondering why George isn't here on a Friday night, it's because he's getting ready for this Mind, Body, Spirit Healing Expo that's happening this weekend, Saturday the 30th and Sunday, October the 1st, and it's in the great state of Pennsylvania. It's at the Monroeville Convention Center in Monroeville, Pennsylvania. Again, that's Saturday, September 30th, which is right now, and Sunday, October the 1st. It's called the Mind, Body, Spirit Healing Expo. Aside from George Norrie, if that's not enough, I mean, it is. James Van Praagh, the psychic medium, will also be there. And I just found this out. I mean, this is so cool. You know who's going to be there as a speaker talking about meditation? The Bionic Woman, movie star, author Lindsay Wagner. How cool is that? Wish I could be there. If you want to be there, then you need to find out quick, find details quick. It's happening this weekend, so just get on up to coasttocoastam.com, and you'll see in the menu bar, George. Just click on George, and all his upcoming appearances are there, and you'll find all about the Mind, Spirit, and Body Expo. Again, that's happening this weekend. Your calls when Open Lines continues right after this on Coast to Coast AM. And back to the phones we go, and on the first-time caller line, Fred, up in Oshawa, my neck of the woods, has been waiting a while. Fred, thanks for your patience, and welcome to Coast AM. Oh, we lost Fred. All right, let's say hi to Carlos. Is it Katy, Texas? Carlos. Hi, Carlos. Welcome.
Hi, Richard. You just got a couple of quick comments. Back on, I can't remember, was it a couple of years ago, I was watching Ancient Aliens, and they mentioned that 12 days before JFK was assassinated, he had sent a memo to the CIA director at the time, and where he wanted to share all the secret UFO files with the Russian government. Because they were trying to, like I said, you mentioned something about the space program or something like that.
Right. Are you talking about his secret UFO inquiry?
Yes. It was. He had mentioned that they wanted to share UFO files with Russia. And I think that they mentioned that he had sent that memo to the CIA. So that George... I can't remember if it was a George Giorgio or somebody mentioned on it on the program. Also, another comment. I have I've seen a movie called Dark Legacy, and there's a video from that night, and I can't remember on that movie, but they say this. I think it was the Secretary of the Press for JFK, where he mentions that the bullet came from the front. The bullet that hit is in the head.
Right.
It had come from, on the video and the movie from that night, I think it was the Secretary of the Press for JFK or maybe for the Texas governor, but they mentioned that the bullet came from the front.
Yeah, from the front and the side, clearly, the grassy knoll. I mean, we see the president's head you know, going back. That doesn't happen if you get hit from the, despite what Dan Rather says, that doesn't happen. I mean, that just defies the laws of physics as far as I can tell.
And the fact is they also mentioned in that documentary that anybody that was a good shot could not have hit Kennedy from that window, because apparently there was, at that time, there was a tree on the way that covered the street.
It's still there. It's actually been pruned back. You know, I was in Daly Plaza. I was 6-7 years ago, and I had an appointment with the late Jim Mars. I was to meet him at his house, and he was to call me to give me directions, because he was kind of secretive of his location, and understandably so. So I had some time to kill, so I went to Daly Plaza. I'd never been. The phone rings. It's Jim, and he starts giving me, over the phone, a guided tour of Daly Plaza. And that's the first thing he pointed out, Carlos. He said, do you see that tree by the window, the sixth-floor window?
Uh-huh.
I said, yeah. I said, that looks pretty small, that tree. He said, yes, but he said it was much bigger. They pruned it back several times over the years. And Jim, you know, he grew up in Dallas. He remembers that that tree was much larger in 63. They actually pruned it back for the JF, the Oliver Stone movie. He said that tree clearly would have obscured the window, the shot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw that, too. Also, on that same movie, on Dark Legacy, it's pretty good, actually. They showed people, the moment they heard the shot, there were actually people running towards the Gracie Knoll.
Sure.
That's where the sound came from.
Yes. There were some Secret Service agents who said the same thing. I wanted just to come back to your UFO memo story, which it was. I think it has been pretty much discredited, because I'm trying to remember the author's name. William Lester. He was the one that claimed he uncovered this memo. That it was it was a classified memo. He uncovered it, and the thing is, it only appears in his book. I don't think anyone else has ever been able to find this memo that you referred to, that was supposedly written by Kennedy on November the 12th. That would have been 10 days before his assassination, and this is where he's supposedly asking, for all the government agencies to come clean about UFOs. So as far as I know, that's been debunked.
Oh,
that's the latest I heard.
I just mentioned it because I saw it on a show with on Ancient Aliens.
Right, as if they needed yet another reason to assassinate the president.
I don't know. There's a lot. Actually, they had a lot of reasons, but I do believe it was the CIA. And also, those in that movie, Dark Legacy, with that video of the press secretary. I can't remember who was the Texas governor, press secretary, or JFK's own press secretary, but there's a video where they say that the shot came from the front.
Right. And, well, I'm not sure if his press secretary at the time, it used to be Pierre Salinger. I don't know if Salinger was his press secretary at the time of his assassination, but might have been Pierre Salinger. But it was interesting to hear Connolly speak years after, obviously before he passed away. Connolly had a lot of interesting things to say.
I do have a question, though, that has anybody ever looked into a conspiracy having to do with JFK Jr.? Because there's also Dark Legacy 2, and they mentioned the fact that John Jones, his wife, and his sister-in-law, they left so late. It was already dark when they left for Martha's Vineyard in their plane. But they mentioned the fact that since he had a cast, he couldn't fly the plane real well. So they actually were waiting for a fourth person, which would have been his flight instructor. Mm. So there was actually four people in the plane. I don't know if you remember, but there was a big discrepancy with the search, with the area where the plane supposedly fell.
Yes,
I remember that. They finally, I don't know after how many hours, I think it was 15 hours after the plane had disappeared, they actually moved the search zone somewhere else. I think something like I don't know.
Yeah, I remember thinking, geez, this is taking an awfully long time. The other, you mentioned the cast on John Jr.'s foot. He had actually flown into an airport just north of Toronto, I would say maybe within a week before the fatal plane crash. And I remember hearing about, at that time, someone who, this was in Buttonville Airport, someone commented at that time that he was hobbling around. So he was able to fly that plane with his foot in a cast. So I don't know about that aspect, that he was waiting for another pilot to come. But Don Jeffries has investigated it, and unfortunately I didn't have time to get into the John Jr. Death with Don Jeffries. But if you get his book, Hidden History, I think he devotes an entire chapter to John Jr.
Well, they say it because what they mention it in the movie, because the fact was that he had just gotten his pilot license, so he didn't have that much experience flying the plane, especially at night. So that's why they were waiting for the instructor.
Yeah, well, and I don't know that it was at night, as I recall. I know that originally they said that it was the visibility was poor, but then when they went back and they checked, actually some people actually videotaped some of the original weather reports coming out of Boston and so forth. Apparently visibility was very good. It was a clear day. So again, there's always these contradictory reports, and it's always important to check and remember the original reports, because oftentimes when the narrative changes, they go back and those original reports are gone. Carlos, I got to move along, but hey, thanks so much for checking in from Katy, Texas. I hope you'll call again. Let's go to the wild card line, and Chris is in Ferguson, Missouri. Chris, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Okay. Good morning, Richard.
Yes.
Another possible book for Mr. Jeffries. You read something written by Jack Ruby that,
yes,
what happened to President Kennedy was so elaborate that no one would ever figure it out. This is a similar scenario to the coward who shot Mr. Howard. After I read many books about Jesse James, I knew that there was no way that Robert Ford would ever hurt his admirable friend, Jesse James. They had Senator Crittenden helping them, and they had an association called the Knights of the Golden Circle. So this brings us over to the Mafia, the mobsters, the CIA, who have their own government, where they're making billions of dollars gambling, illegal drugs, prostitution, but they pay no taxes. So when the Kennedys wanted them to follow the rules and pay taxes, the underground said, "You mess with us, you messing with your life." And so now that President Kennedy is gone, and there's no one to stop the mobsters, so what now have the mobsters done to the United States since November the 22nd, 1963?
That's an interesting question. I've talked to crime reporters. There was a very famous crime reporter with the New York Daily News whose name escapes. Was it Jimmy Breslin? I believe I interviewed Jimmy Breslin once on a late night program. And he talked about sort of the heyday of the New York crime families, in the 70s. My impression was that many of those families, there was a lot of the kingpins went to jail, and that a lot of the New York families had been pretty effectively put out of business. They were broken up. Now, who knows? Maybe they went underground. Maybe they moved their base of operation. But my understanding was, Chris, and you can disabuse me of this, but my understanding was that organized crime was dealt a pretty big blow, at least in terms of sort of the traditional, Sicilian mafia that we think about. There may be other organized syndicates that have come up and replaced the mafioso, but as for the Sicilian mob families, a lot of those kingpins went to jail, and I don't know that they ever recovered from that.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Has anybody ever considered a hypnotizing Sirhan, Sirhan.
Well, he believes that, and so does his lawyer, that William Francis Pepper, that he was on Rehypnol at the time of the assassination. So in effect, he was hypnotized when he was set up to be the patsy. I mean, he had that revolver, that 22 revolver, and I forget what was it now. It was kind of it wasn't like a six shot. It was like something odd. It was like five or seven, and all of the bullets that came out of that gun were accounted for. They found them in the acoustic tiles in the ceiling. They found them in the wall, and a couple of bystanders were in fact injured, not killed, by the shots that Sirhan fired. But Rosie Greer, who was on security detail for Bobby Kennedy at the time, he talked about, you know, he leapt on Sirhan immediately and grabbed his hand that was holding this pistol, and he had it pressed against the steam table. And almost robotically, Sirhan just kept firing the weapon, like almost as if he was doing it unconsciously. He just, like he was a robot. But all of those bullets that came from Sirhan's gun were accounted for. None of them were found in Bobby.
Okay, I called George Nori about a year ago, and I told him that I was watching What's My Line in about the year of 1965. And I saw and I heard Dorothy Kilgallen say, "I know who killed President Kennedy."
Mm.
And I'd say within 2 months after that, they found her dead with
That's
all
right.
these different four. Huh?
That's right.
With all these,
yes.
With all these different four obituates in her, like they found in Marilyn Monroe. I basically said right there at 12 years old, there's no way that Lee Harvey Oswald did this by himself. So I hope that they all investigate that. Dorothy Kilgallen, why she said something like that, not because she was boastful or anything like that. I just think that something came over her and she couldn't control it. I think that after she said it, I think she really felt like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that live on TV. But
right. That may have been her death warrant.
Absolutely, 100%. And she knew it too after it happened. I think something came over her.
She just couldn't contain it anymore. She was so angry. Well, the way that LAPD...
I don't think she's angry about it. I think really something just came over her, and it just came out.
Ah, okay. All right, well, perhaps she did pay the ultimate price for blurting that out on What's My Line. I'd love to go back and see if I can find that episode. Perhaps it lives somewhere on YouTube. And I'm wondering whether Thomas Noguchi, who was the coroner at the time, whether he would have performed the autopsy on Kilgallen. Of course, he was chased out of town because he refused to sign the first version of Bobby Kennedy's autopsy. He had an entirely different view of where those bullets came from. All right, here's David Bowie, Life on Mars, taking us into the break. When we come back, more open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We will get back to your phone calls. Wayne in British Columbia, Tom in the Bronx, and Fred in Oshawa, who's checked in again on the international line and wants to talk about presidents and the Federal Reserve banking system. You're up next. Open lines when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Welcome back. We are into the home stretch, and I want to get to someone who's been very patient. He's on the international line. Fred is in Oshawa, Canada. Fred, good morning. Thanks for your patience.
How you doing, Richard?
I'm all right. How are you?
Well, fine. Haven't talked to you in a while.
Well, glad to talk to you again, Fred.
Listen, on the JFK thing, there's a pattern there that no one's mentioned. All the presidents of the United States who are trying to change the monetary system have been assassinated.
Well, we alluded to that with Kennedy's executive order that would allow the government to create a debt-free money backed by silver, Executive Order 1110. We mentioned that may have been, you know, one of the motivations, one of the motives for his death.
Sorry, all the presidents that have been assassinated, mm-hmm. were going to change the monitoring system. Lincoln changed the greenback.
Yes,
because of
yes.
the high interest rates during
That's
the
right.
Civil War?
Well, McKinley wasn't, after Kennedy, or sorry, after Lincoln, I'm trying to remember now, I believe the central bank, it wasn't called the Federal Reserve, they lost their charter for a period, and then the plan was to bring in the Federal Reserve. So McKinley, who was the other president, there was Lincoln, McKinley, Garfield, who was, I believe, assassinated in, was it Buffalo or Baltimore? One of them was assassinated in Buffalo, the other in Baltimore. So there was, again, Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, and Kennedy. McKinley opposed, you know, the issuance of fiat money. And so the theory goes that once they had him out of the way, then they could bring in the Federal Reserve, which happened in 1913. But yeah, you're right. McKinley was opposed to it. He wanted to go back to the gold standard. And he and his, it was the Secretary of State, I think, John Sherman, who was related to the great Civil War general, Tecumseh Sherman, they worked really hard to prevent that from happening, and they ran against William James Bryan, who was in favor of kind of a Federal Reserve. So, yeah, you're thinking that once McKinley is eliminated, that paved the way for bringing in the Federal Reserve in 1913. But I don't know what President Garfield's position was. Perhaps you do. What was Garfield's stance on?
All I know is I checked into it, and all the presidents that were going to change the system got assassinated.
Mm.
You're better at American history for a Canadian than I am.
Well, I don't know about that. That's very kind of you to say. I do have a huge emotional investment in the United States, that's for sure.
And President Trump is going to change the federal system. He has stated, and I think he stated something about looking into the JFK thing, too.
Well, according to Don Jeffries, who was our guest in the first 2 hours, and his book, Hidden History, the second edition, the foreword was written by Roger Stone, who was a former Nixon aide and advisor, and also is a close friend of President Trump's. And according to Stone, President Trump is very interested in conspiracies. I mean, you name it, he's interested in it. So, for example, the whole the whole vaccine issue. Trump had met with Robert Kennedy Jr. and they were talking about a panel or congressional hearing to look into the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Now it seems he's backed off a little bit, but I would still hold out some hope that, you know, that if any president is going to look into the vaccination industry, it would be Trump. He's just reckless enough to go poking around in these places, but that could also be his undoing.
Yeah, let's hope he stays alive.
Absolutely. I don't want any president to fail. I don't want any president to be injured, whether I agree with them politically or not. All right. Thanks for the call, Fred, and I appreciate your patience. I really do. Let's see. Let's say hi to another Canuck. Wayne is in British Columbia. Wayne, good morning, good evening. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
My phone's going to die, so I have to be brief. What I want to say is that if the government isn't pro-free speech and pro-right to bear arms, then it's BS. Trump rules.
All right. You got it said in 20 seconds or less. I appreciate that, Wayne. Thank you. Let's say hi to, let's go to Tom in the Bronx. Tom, good morning.
How are you? I'd like to say this, that the day Kennedy was killed, I woke up to school, to go to school, and I heard on the radio, oh, he's headed for Dallas. I had a clock radio that came on. And I said to myself, well, I guess he'll be all right going to Dallas. He'll be all right. But inside, like I almost had like a premonition that something was going to go wrong. I never shared that with the family when I got up. you know, I just
right.
kept it to myself. But when I went to school, I was in high school then, all of a sudden in the afternoon, it came over the loudspeaker that classes were dismissed because President Kennedy was killed in Dallas. And it's almost like I had a premonition that day that something was going to go wrong.
Right. In your gut, you felt also, something. So were you surprised then when you heard it, or did you just say, I sort of thought that was going to happen?
I'll tell you the truth. I've had a feeling that I almost knew what was going to go on. I wasn't that surprised in a strange way. Also, years prior to this, near the Bronx Zoo, I used to live near the Bronx Zoo, and years back in the 1950s, and we were like 10 blocks away. Mrs. Oswald and Oswald, her son, moved to the Bronx because the Texas authorities at the time, they were going to put Oswald away in some institution.
I think he had to go for a psychiatric evaluation, if I remember correctly.
She took Oswald to the Bronx to get away from that.
Hmm.
And ironically, my mother and I were coming out of, actually we had moved away by then, but we had relatives that lived in the building we were in. And we were on 180th Street and Prospect Avenue, turning around the corner. Maybe we had the car parked there or whatever. Anyway, we ran into a Southern woman, and I swore years later that was Mrs. Oswald we ran into. She was living close to the zoo, too.
Interesting.
At that time.
And did she have a young Lee with her?
No, she was alone. But she said something to my mother. I don't know how the conversation started, but we ran into her close by, and she started to ask her something, or I don't know, maybe directions or something. But we ran into the Southern woman. I heard the Southern voice, and that was Mrs. Oswald.
Interesting. There you go.
Yeah,
it's quite possible. It's quite possible.
I like to say this. I heard the man before me.
Yes.
And this fellow over here has it right. Everybody is in the economic system. The Federal Reserve is holding us all hostage constantly. In other words, give the devil his due, I say, is in this respect. They print the money for the country. And in other words, and this catastrophe that happened in Puerto Rico with all the money that they have to print, and then we have to borrow money at usury interest, I say not to push the Fed out altogether. Let them print the money we need, and then put the printing presses in full gear for overtime to print the money that they claim we owe them. In other words,
that's
leave
right.
Our economy alone for a change. It would be a nice thing.
Well, as many wiser people have said, the Federal Reserve is neither federal, it's not private,
it's
and it's not a reserve.
A
there you
company.
Go. Tom, appreciate the call. Thanks for checking in from the Bronx. East of the Rockies, Michael is in Virginia Beach. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Richard, and I'd like to have a long conversation with you and John Loftus sometime. On the subject that I'm going to bring up. Of course, John was the top Nazi hunter for Nixon.
Yes, I've talked with John. He was the president of the Holocaust Museum, I believe, down in Miami at one time.
Yes. Well, here's the deal, and this is why we've got to talk. You, on your show in Canada, I've listened to it, and George, here in the United States, you've done the best job of telling us what the trees look like in the Kennedy assassination. But neither of you have given us the forest. Let me give you a picture of the forest. We have been told for years that about half the Jews of the world live in the United States. Now, think about this. Operation Paperclip, which is what John Loftus was going after for Nixon, Operation Paperclip reputedly brought in 3,000 top Nazi scientists. That's wrong. There were many more Nazis brought in. Here is the situation. You've got to read the book entitled Protestants by Alec Ryrie. The churches, not the Federal Reserve, the churches in America are stopping us from knowing what happened in the Kennedy assassination. Here's what Ryrie brings out in his book. Top theologians, Protestant theologians, here in a Protestant majority country in Germany, and we have one here in the United States, Protestant theologians were saying, with Hitler, agreeing with Hitler, that their baptized Christian members for generations in the Christian church could not be considered real Christians if they had any traceable Jewish blood in them. When George Norrie and Richard Serrett are ready to talk about how we can blow open the Kennedy assassination, you will talk to me about what I just told you.
But all right. Well, you send me an email, Michael. I mean, if you're alluding to, you know, anti-Semitism within the Christian Church, and I am a Christian, that is certainly, you know, something that we need to come to terms with. It's a chapter in the Christian faith, certainly prior to, I guess, Vatican II. It was tangible. It was tangible. And in certain Christian branches, I suppose, it still exists. How that, what that has to do with the Kennedy assassination, I'm not sure, Michael, but I will, I'll look forward to getting your email. But the exfiltration of Nazis into the United States, again, many of them had escaped the hangman's noose at Nuremberg. And what positions of power did they assume? We mentioned Walter Dornberger. He was either the president or vice president of Bell Helicopter. There were a lot of powerful there were a lot of powerful Nazis who were brought over to the United States and found themselves in positions of influence. How did that happen? Why was that allowed to happen? Let's say hi to Vince in Livingston. Is it Livingston, Montana, I believe, west of the Rockies? Hey, Vince, good morning.
Well, I've been waiting a long time. I didn't think you wanted to talk about the fact that I've researched this since March 6, 1975, when the Zapruder film was first played on American television, and I am convinced that Jackie killed JFK.
Oh, dear.
The Warren Commission swapped frames 315 and 314 and were caught. It's right in the Warren files that they got caught swapping those two films.
Yes, if more of that.
If you look at Zapruder 313, 14, and 15, you'll see the bullet coming out and going up higher. And by swapping those frames, they made the bullet look like it was coming in and going into the brain. And they intentionally did that. Jackie had been a CIA honeypot assassin in 1950-51. During her Sabone years, she was surrounded with Murchison, Auchincloss, Blackjack Bouvier, and Aristotle Onassis. She spent the month before the assassination in Greece with Aristotle Onassis in his camps rehearsing the assassination after a pregnancy ended. This was shortly after the Jack Kennedy Happy Birthday, Mr. President embarrassment. But this was no domestic dispute. She was a hitter for the CIA in Paris. This was not her first rodeo.
All right, Vince, I got to tell you, that's a new one on me. But thank you for sharing. Not buying it for a second. But you know, it's an interesting theory. I'm not sure how her sitting to the president's right at point-blank range would explain the trajectory of the bullets, the head going back the way it did. Obviously, that shot came from the front and from the side. unless you're saying that there was another shooter and Jackie was the one that fired the fatal shot. But I'm sorry, no, I'm not buying that one for a second. However, Vince is allowed to speak his piece and offer that up, but I don't think there's much of any credibility to that claim. Let's see. Let's say hi to Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana. Cornelius, welcome.
Hey there, Mr. Richard Sheridan. Thank you, Ms. Donna, our call screener. I'm the God, Guns, and Gold man, the Bible, Bullets, and Beans man, telling everybody.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are, sir.
You said you've been everywhere, but have you been to Louisiana?
That's the other one. Thank you. I was trying to remember the third. I hadn't been to Wyoming, I haven't been to Rhode Island, and I have not been to Louisiana.
Let me tell you something, Canuck. You need to come down here for Mardi Gras. I've been trying to get... Tommy Danheiser's been down here for Mardi Gras, but George hadn't. And I met George and Tommy at the Oswald Conference, and what I wanted to talk about Puerto Rico, but let me talk about this Oswald Conference. All your callers and stuff, and the guy you had on earlier about hidden history, they're pretty much right on with what's been going on. And I, like I said, Richard, I hope and pray before anything happens to our country that you'll come to Mardi Gras in New Orleans. I live up here in Alexandria, so we're about 3 or 4 hours away, which is about 300 or 400 miles away. We're in dead center of the state, but New Orleans, that's where the party town is. They say, laissez le bon temps rouler, let the good times roll.
All right, my friend, and I got to roll because we are out of time, but great talking to you, Cornelius, and I'll make an effort to get down to Louisiana one of these days soon. Love to do a road trip. Love to do a road trip with my family and hit all 50 states eventually. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Sean Latasor, and here in Toronto, Nathan Smith. I forgot Donna Walker. Can't forget Donna Walker. Here in Toronto, Nathan Smith, Scotty Guest, Donna Pollard. I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. This is Coast to Coast AM. Until tonight, until later, next week rather. So long for now.